5:30. I'd like to call this meeting of the Plan Commission to order. We have a quorum. Is anyone registered for public comment?
No.
Are there any communications, disclosures, or recusals from members of the body? Seeing none. Minutes of the February 20th, 2017 meeting. Is there a motion to approve? Moved by Mr. Cantrell, seconded by Mr. Oath. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That passes. Minutes of the February 23rd special meeting. Moved by Mr. Cantrell, seconded by Mr. Oath. Any discussion on those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That passes also. Call your attention. We have one more meeting in March on the 20th and two in April on the 3rd and the 24th. Bringing us to routine business, we have are three and four part of routine business?
Yep.
Okay, so we have four items for routine business. I'll take them all up at once. Item 1, Legistar 46041, accepting a permanent limited easement for a bus shelter at 4325 Nakoma Road. Item 2, Legistar 46161, a dedication of a public right-of-way from Meyer Road from McAllen Properties, LLC, dedicating Outlot 4 of the McAllen 120 Business Park plat for public right-of-way purposes located at 3603 Meyer Road. Items 3 and 4 are related to be considered together. Item 3, 46212, authorizing the mayor and city clerk to execute subterranean and airspace lease with 202 East Washington, LLC, the owner of property located at 1 North Webster Street, to accommodate proposed encroachments of certain building features into the East Washington Avenue and North Webster Street public rights of way. And item 4, Legistar 46219, authorizing the mayor and city clerk to execute a subterranean and airspace lease with the 202 East Washington LLC to accommodate the subterranean and airspace encroachments in the North Webster Street and East Washington Avenue public rights of way. Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Cantrell, seconded by Alder Zellers. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Passes. Bringing us to new business, item 5, Legistar 46232, amending and creating several sections of the Madison General Ordinance to update the city's parking lot design standards. Do we have a presentation scheduled on this?
We don't. We have a traffic engineering is here just to address questions if there are any.
Are there any questions on item 5? Seeing none, motion to approve. Mr. Cantrell, seconded by Mr. Oath. Discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. Special item of business number 6, Legistar 46303, informational presentation by the University of Wisconsin-Madison regarding their forthcoming CI Campus Institutional Zoning District Master Plan. Okay. We won't have city staff first, correct?
We'll
just go directly. Okay. The presentation will be made by Gary Brown, representing UW-Madison. Okay. Do you want some of these lights turned down, Gary?
That's
thank you, Tim.
Just fine.
First, wanted to just thank you all for giving us some time to share with you our draft campus master plan for UW-Madison. Again, my name is Gary Brown, the Director of Campus Planning, Landscape Architecture. We were here, maybe 24 months ago or so, giving you an outline of where we were headed with the master plan. This is typically something we do every 10 years, and we spend about 2 years doing that. Well, we're past that now and going into 2017, I think about month 26 or 28. But we wanted to give you a preview of the recommendations from the master plan tonight. We'll do that quickly. And then in a couple months or so, we'll be back for formal action as we go through the city commissions. We're also going to be at UDC on Wednesday night this week giving an informational presentation. And then we'll do our application in early April and then get out to Joint West and the Joint Southeast committees and the neighborhoods to share with them our final recommendations and be back to you. And I've got a schedule on here to share with you probably in May or so, May or June, and then be off to Common Council in July. So that should complete our overall process. So we're going to talk a little bit about schedule, what the overall documentation process looks like. We do have all of this information out on our website, and I'll give you that link at the end. It should be in your packet. We'll talk a little bit about the campus institutional zoning maps and what campus institutional zoning means for the University of Wisconsin, the city of Madison, and this part of the city. Talk a little bit about our recommended development capacity, land uses, phasing, where we're going to be in 10 years, because, again, this is a 10-year process. So the city of Madison and the new CI zoning district requires us to have a new master plan every 10 years, or the process going through 10 years, which is great, because that's the schedule we're on. Every 10 years, we spend time doing this. We'll talk about campus design guidelines and standards, which the Urban Design Commission will actually approve as part of their review process, and then talk a little bit about the zoning review process and how projects at the university will go once the CI district is approved, and then a little bit about our campus design review board. So this is the product or the graphic for the overall campus master plan. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but just so you understand, the gray boxes on here are existing buildings and being recommended to stay. The tan boxes are building opportunities. And I want to make that very clear that these are just opportunities. We're not talking about doing a full build-out of the master plan. If we were to continue on the schedule the way we've been over the last couple of years, it'd probably take about 75 or 80 years to complete this master plan. So I know I'm not going to be around then. Maybe some of my staff might be, but we're trying to do a capacity plan, and that's really what we did in 2005, was to say how much should we be building on this land that we call UW-Madison and downtown Madison. What's the capacity or what's the carrying capacity of the land that we have? So these are just opportunities. We only build when we have to build and when our programs are telling us that we need to have something new. This is a schedule that, again, shows where we're going to be here in the next couple months, going through the variety of commissions and committees with a suggested date of June 19th back here at the Plan Commission for final action and recommendation to the Common Council. We have a series of documents that support the overall master plan process, and I believe you received copies of our executive summary. It's a short booklet that really boils everything down and provides you with a good overview of the overall master plan. We have a full technical document that if you're really not sleeping some nights, it's 1,600 pages of information that has a variety of details on anything and everything related to the campus master plan. A bulk of that is about utilities and information related to utilities on the campus. And our green infrastructure master plan, our long-range transportation plan, a landscape master plan, all of those sub-plans are part of that much larger technical document. We have a specific campus institutional district master plan, which pulls out the requirements of the zoning master plan and have that as a separate document. And then this document called Campus Design Guidelines and Standards, which, again, will go to UDC for review and approval. Just to give you a sense of what's in the CI district master plan, I have a table of contents here. And this, again, sets right forth what's in the CI district in the zoning code. And it talks about all of these specific areas that need to be included. So we pull all that together and put that in a specific document, and that just gives you a sense of where we're headed with all of that. This is all drafted. It's available on our master plan. You can go out and review it now. This is a map of the existing zoning. So everything in blue here is what's recommended for campus institutional zoning. This was done under the prior review and change to the city zoning code, which I was part of that review process. You'll notice that there's this black dashed line that runs along there. We call that the campus development plan boundary. And you'll see that some of those things are not in blue. So the entire campus is not being rezoned CI. There are recommendations to continue some of the planned unit development or the planned development areas, such as Camp Randall and the Cole Center, and those things will continue to carry on their zoning requirements associated with those planned developments. We have some conservancy areas up around the Class of 1918 Marsh and University Bay, which is in green. Those will continue to be that way. And then there's that little L-shaped box there, which is the Village of Sherwood Hills. And yes, indeed, the west half of the hospital is in Sherwood Hills, and the right half is in the city of Madison. So you see also a mix of parcels down in the south campus, south of University Avenue, where there's still some private parcels that we are intending to purchase at some point in time as we need to develop those areas. So just taking a look at now an overlay, we've taken the proposed building options and laid that over the CI district so you can get a sense of what might be coming down the pipe if we were to approve the CI master plan and what some of those building opportunities are. Where are they all? And I'm going to zoom in here on that south campus area. So the line going east-west across the top there is University Avenue right through here. And this is what we call south campus. So you see, you know, some of these are still not part of the CI district. We have PDs here around Union South, the Charter Street Heating Plant, Camp Randall Coal Center. We are talking with city staff about maybe bringing some of these parcels into the CI district since they've likely met all of their conditions of approval. We'll talk through those at some point in time. And then these orange boxes are privately held parcels within the campus development plan boundary that we continue to have ongoing discussions with the private landowners. And if at some point in time we need to be doing develop in that area, we'll be interested in talking about them with them about purchasing the property. So if and when that were to happen, what we would do is come in for a rezone process. And so we would be rezoning those what are now likely traditional residential parcels, rezoning those to CI when we actually have a development project. And then that would kick that process in. Land use map, very typical of any master plan showing the different types of uses on campus, with the yellow being residential, purple and research, blue is academic. Very similar, so that's what's existing today. We also have a proposed land use map in the details. These are all of the potential building removals over time, and again, this is over the full, complete build-out of the master plan. This is obviously not going to happen tomorrow, but I do have a map coming up here that talks about the next 10 years and where we might be seeing removal. We did set some phasing opportunities for this. These are just a guess. If we were to think about what we might be able to do if and when we had the money or the programmatic need, so we have a series of four different phases here, each about 6 years in time. This likely is not going to happen exactly the way we have it laid out. In fact, I know it's not. Knowing the latest recommendations from the governor's capital budget, we're likely pushing everything out 2 years now and maybe even 4 years. So we continue to react to those changes as they happen. And we'll continue to do that. And our master plan is very fluid and allows that to happen. So, again, proposed land use, capacity. Again, this gets back to our 2005 master plan, and we tweaked this a little bit since then. There's potential growth down here in the southeast campus around the Cole Center and the College of Engineering. We typically do a detailed facilities master plan for each of our colleges and units on campus. So we go from the very broad 30,000-foot level and a campus master plan down to a detailed level at the college and department level and looking at actually the conditions of the buildings, the roofs, the building envelopes, the windows, and then the programmatic needs. How are the existing buildings meeting your programs or not? And where do you see them going in the next 10 years? And we write a very detailed master plan for each of those. We did that for the College of Engineering, and that resulted in some additional need or potential space. So that bumped up our numbers. As you can see, we had potential back in 2005 of about 26 million square feet of additional potential growth on campus. And we're just a little over that right now at 26.6. So not a lot of change, but we still have a potential for growth. And what that tells us is that we don't have to build satellite campuses. We don't have to go out and move schools like the engineering school out to the research park or the business school out to the research park. We have plenty of potential for growth if and when we need it. We don't have to think about breaking the campus down. So these, again, are just all kinds of opportunities for potential development. We have floor area ratios on here just to give a sense of, for us of how much density is happening in each part of the campus and where the majority of the change will be. And you see on the West Campus, not too much change, things coming and going. The majority of change really is south of University Avenue, what we're calling the South Campus, where we're adding quite a bit of density to that part. As we go on, these are now in the next 10 years, what we're thinking could be happening. We know pretty much what's going to be happening in the next 2 years. We know a little bit more now that the budget is out, but that won't be signed until July, and we might know a little bit more then. But in the next 6 years, we have some confidence of where things are going. When you start getting pushed out to 10 years, it gets really foggy, and we don't quite know what's happening, but we can pretty much guess that these might be some of the future building removals as we look into the future of development on campus. And then proposed buildings or additions, we know things like the natatorium are coming up. We know the vet school is planning an addition and a new parking ramp here on Lot 62. We're working on some plans out at the Nielsen for a new wellness center. Things at Babcock Hall are in design right now. Engineering is looking at a replacement for 1410. So there's all these potential or projects that are in the planning stages right now and will hopefully be funded as we move forward. The set of campus design guidelines, again, these are all on our website, go into a lot of detail about each area on campus. And what we tried to do was break the campus down into design neighborhoods. This was a concept that we talked about in 2005. We were able to shrink the neighborhoods and get down to about 8 or 9 specific neighborhoods right now. So very typically based around what's going on today. So we've got the historic campus, number 6 here. Number 1 is sort of open space and green space. 2 is the health sciences. 3, federal property. 4, the College of Ag and Life Sciences. 5, residential along the lakeshore. 7, East Campus. 9, the 2 big event centers. And then number 8 is the South Campus area for potential future research and academic buildings. So each of these design neighborhoods has a chapter in the design guidelines, and I'm just going to go through the central of a historic neighborhood so you get a sense of what's in each of those chapters. We start out with a review of the historic parts of those neighborhoods. What are the historic buildings? What are the landmarks? What kind of characters do we like about those historic buildings? Talk about the location and then give an overview of the neighborhood. We look at massing and scale. We have the entire campus now in SketchUp in 3D so we can play around with what things look like. And they're actually topographically rectified so we can see where they're falling among the hills and the valleys of the campus. We have a whole map that details building heights. And just to give you a sense, here's the overall campus. We've gone through and looked at all of the currently approved master plans. So we've got neighborhood plans surrounding us. We've got the South Regent Street South Campus plan. We have the University Avenue plan, the downtown plan. All of those have specific recommendations on building heights and mass and setbacks. We took all of that information and put it together and came up with these recommendations. Again, loosely based on the 2005 master plan, but also where we think we're headed with the development on campus. So in general, we start lower against the lakeshore, staying around the 3-4-story height. Then get higher as you get towards the center of campus. The highest spots are down the Johnson University Dayton corridor, and then it starts stepping back down to the neighborhoods along Regent Street. So more density, more height in the center where we have a much more urban condition and much more open and shorter buildings as you get north of the lakeshore and down to the residential areas in the bottom. So a couple areas where we conflict with the existing neighborhood plans. One, the second phase of the Energy Institute is recommending something a little bit taller than what the neighborhood plan was suggesting. That'll actually be a rezoning process because that's currently zoned traditional residential. We'll be back here if and when we have a project to add on to the Energy Institute, and that'll go through a whole review process with Urban Design and the Plan Commission. And then also in the South Campus, we have a couple blocks here, the Charter Street Heating Plant area and around AOSS in that area. We're looking at buildings probably around 8 stories as opposed to 10 or 12 stories. We're trying to just sort of mitigate what's going on in there. But these are all guidelines and just trying to set a typical standard for building heights. We do try and set those to feet so that you have not only number of stories, because stories on campus is something totally different than residential and commercial stories buildings out in the city. We wanted to try and set feet to that. So we tried to look at those master plans that are approved as neighborhood plans and try and come into some agreement as to what those heights should be. Ken, did you have a question?
Yeah, those two with the tens next to the left of the Kohl Center.
So let's see. So that's the Regent Street plan recommended 12 stories. Yeah, no, the downtown plan recommended 12. The Regent Street plan recommended 8, and we're saying 10. So it's sort of a, okay, you know, somewhere in there, and you know, we'll work that out. So that's very detailed and shows all that. We also have a map that shows build two lines or setback lines, but we're really thinking of them as build two lines to create these outdoor spaces. And then we actually went street by street, right-of-way by right-of-way, and gave dimensions for all of that. So lots of good, gory details in all of those, and this is just an overall map looking at that. Again, trying to create these corridors of green space along the campus and building buildings up to them, especially along in the South Campus area where it is much more an urban kind of setting. We have a set of landscape principles, landscape guidelines for each district, materials, both what's existing today and what you should be looking for in any potential new development in those areas. We have an inventory of all of the existing buildings, when they were built, when they had additions put onto them, who were the architects, what typical style of architecture do they have, just to give people and the design teams that come onto campus a sense of the history of these buildings and how they're going to fit into that neighborhood. When we hire architects and engineers, we ask that they, you know, not build this award-winning mega thing that sort of sticks out. We want you to be part of the campus, part of that neighborhood. And this gives you a sense of what the history is and why we're in these certain neighborhoods across the campus. We like award-winning buildings, just not what I call hero buildings everywhere. You sort of have to have a few standard here and there. So our review process is being proposed such that we hire an AE. We go to our new design review board, and I'll go over that here in just a couple minutes. We go to the City of Madison Development Assistance Team. We go to the joint campus area committees, both joint west or joint southeast, depending on where the proposal is being located. We go back to our new urban or design review board. We go back to the committee. So there's this interactive process going between the design review board and the neighborhoods and keeping everybody informed. We end up with a final meeting with our design review board, and they make recommendations, and it comes down to a city staff site plan review process. What we're doing is we're using our design review board and these campus neighborhood meetings to make the final recommendations and to say, yes, it meets the master plan as approved by the City of Madison Plan Commission and the Common Council. Anything that's not shown in the master plan would obviously be a change, and we'd have to come back here and modify our master plan through a typical zoning process. So in the CI District at 28097 talks about final design review. This is basically replacing the Urban Design Commission, and we're trying to model it after the Urban Design Commission, putting design experts on that committee. But it gives you some sense of setting up these design standards, review procedures. All of that goes to the Urban Design Commission, and then Plan Commission takes a look at it, and this established committee is where all of the activity happens. So what we're recommending right now is we have the university architect and landscape architect on. We have a private national firm architect and landscape architect. We'd like to bring in national experts that are known for campus planning and campus architecture. And we've been doing that on the current design review board we have, and it's been working very successfully. We've even been able to reach out to some of our alumni and have them sit on the committee. So they have some tie back to what's happening on campus. Or we look to some national consultants that have worked on campus or have worked in Madison. So they have some understanding of who we are and what Madison is about. We have the City of Madison Planning Director or designee from Joint West or Joint Southeast, depending on the location, and then an Urban Design Commission member designated by the Urban Design Commission. So this is very similar to what's happening now at the American Center, at the Research Park, some of those other big groups around the city that have their own architectural review committees. If you have your phone and you want a quick connect to that, you can scan the QR code there. I believe it's in your packets as well. But it'll give you a direct link out to the master plan, and you can take a look at any of those details there. And I believe that's it. So ready for questions.
Thank you.
Could somebody pull the lights back up? In the meantime, are there questions from members of the commission? Seeing none, you really did a great job.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. See you in a couple months. Put on your reading glasses and get through that 1,600 pages. Yep, thank you.
So we do not need to take any action on this, do we? Okay, just for the record, we also have present Aaron Williams, 30 North Mills, representing UW-Madison, Bill Pallet, 44 East Mifflin, representing UW-Madison, Rob Kennedy, 51 South Baldwin, representing UW-Madison Transportation, all available to answer questions. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you, UW. We'll see you in a couple of months. So, first of all, I neglected to mention this earlier. Now would be a good time to silence your cell phones if you haven't already done so. And next, for those of you who aren't regularly here with us, we have a process we call the consent agenda, in which we take up all the items that everyone agrees to, no one insists on speaking on. We take them up all at once. Those people can go home and enjoy the rest of their evening while the rest of us get to stick around and deal with the more contentious issues. And there are, as part of this, some referrals. And let's see. So the first item that we have on this is actually referral of items 11 and 12. Are going to be referred to the April 3rd meeting. They are, 11 is Legistar 45542, changing zoning at 302 South Gammon Road. Item 12, Legistar 45251, is a demolition permit and conditional use and redevelopment at 302 South Gammon Road. Both of those refer to the April 3rd meeting. Items 13 and 14 are related and on consent. Item 13, Legistar 45723, changing zoning of property at 4904 Trade Winds Parkway from IL Industrial Limited to SE Suburban Employment. And item 14, Legistar 45657, conditional use for a college or university tenant at 4904 Trade Winds Parkway. We have one registrant, Jerry Borquin, 6515 Grand Teton Plaza. He's the project architect, available to answer questions. Item 15, Legistar 46112, an alteration to an approved plan development at 7933 Tree Lane to remove a plan commission condition of approval. We have one registrant, Matt Melendez, 320 East Center Street, Milwaukee, representing Heartland Housing, available to answer questions. Item 16, Legistar 45802, conditional use to convert an office building into a private school at 6400 Schrader Road. We have one registrant, Mario Sierra, 5202 Regent Street, representing Lighthouse Church, Madison, Inc., available to answer questions. And item 17 is not on consent, is it?
No.
And item 18, Legistar 46056, changing definitions of lot line, rear, and setback, rear yard with respect to irregularly shaped lots. and there is a substitute that you should have seen. That constitutes the consent and referral agenda. Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Cantrell moves, seconded by Mr. Pilevsky. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That passes unanimously. For all of you who are here on those items, enjoy the rest of your evening. So, we should, we'll take 8 to 10. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's just do it. Okay, let's go to items 8, 9, and 10. They're all related. Item 8, Legistar 45541, changing zoning at property located at 1302 to 1430 Reiner Road. Item 9, Legistar 45250, approving the preliminary and final plat of Woods Farm on this property at the same address. And item 10, Legistar 45533, demolition permit for two single-family residences at 1318 and 1402 Reiner Road as part of the implementation of the Woods Farm subdivision. Mr. Parks, Mr. Parks.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Commission. Just briefly, items 8, 9, and 10 are a revised proposal before you for approval of a new concept for the Woods Farm subdivision on Reiner Road that we discussed at your February 6th meeting, if memory serves. The revised proposal before you calls for 100 single-family lots, the demolition of the two homes, 12 lots in TRU, one zoning, one for our future residential building complex, and then 11 lots for attached housing products to be determined later. The revised letter of intent indicated two-family twin homes. The previous proposal before you was four-unit homes. Both of those uses are permitted in the requested TRU, one zoning. You have a substitute zoning map amendment before you tonight. That addresses the revised layout of the subdivision. Staff from the Planning Division, Parks Department, City Engineering, and Traffic Engineering have worked very closely since the February 6th meeting with the applicant to address the many concerns that were raised in the February 6th staff report as well as by the Planning Commission at its meeting that evening. And we feel, by and large, most of the comments and concerns previously addressed have been satisfied through the revised subdivision proposal that is before you tonight. The layout of the subdivision is even more consistent than the previous version with the general land use and street layout shown in the Northeast Neighborhoods Development Plan. And we also have sorted out with the applicant the size and location of the park, as well as its suitability for future park use, and feel that the three stormwater management outlots that are shown on the revised subdivision will satisfy the City Engineering Department's needs in terms of stormwater management for the site. The one remaining area of concern, which you will note in your conditions of approval, on page 9 of the revised staff report, conditions 11, and then the note condition 13, deal with the housing mix that is shown on the revised subdivision proposal. As you'll recall from our discussion a month ago, there was some concern about the lack of variety in the single-family home lot sizes and the homes that could be built on those lots. The neighborhood plan places an emphasis on variety of lot widths, lot sizes, and we feel then and feel now that more variety is needed. We have conditions of approval before the Plan Commission tonight that will compel greater variety than either version that you have seen have proposed so far. I believe that Mr. Calkins, representing the applicant, may have a revised version that he would like to float before you to potentially see if they're heading in the right direction or if they've met the mark with Condition 11 in particular. So that is something that the commission should ask Mr. Calkins about. I believe he's registered on the item. Other than the lot size question that is outstanding, we feel that the project that is before you meets the criteria for approval, subject to the conditions in the recommendation section, and I'd be happy to answer questions after the public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parks. I'll open the public hearing. We have one registrant, Mike Calkins, 5010 Vosges Road, Madison, in support, wishing to speak.
Good evening. Mike Calkins, back to see you again. Sorted through some things with staff. Very helpful. Had a good hour and a half meeting. Got through some issues. Colored up a map today just to talk about the different areas that the developer has indicated is would be a primary target for modifying lot sizes as recommended by staff. And that would be in this general area coming in off of Rainer Road. There's 18 lots here and 5 lots up here across from the TRU1 zoning. So there's on this plan 23 lots, which the suggestion in the conditions approval would be a minimum of 20. So in an effort based on recommendation, that's what our proposal would be at this time. And if those locations are satisfactory, we could get that one behind us too. So other than that, we've read the rest of the conditions and are fine continuing to work with staff to get plat recorded.
Questions for Mr. Calkins? Ms. Berger.
Hi. I'm just looking at your map and seeing the brown ones around the blue outlet two look a bit bigger than the map that was in our packet. I know that planning staff had recommended potentially changing that. Were you also
the proposal initially was with some 4-unit because there was some interest there, and then there's somebody that was wanting to do some twin homes. So I think we'd like to leave the number of those duplex or lat layout of 100 by 130 on the preliminary flat. And as the developer continues to move through those discussions with a potential buyer, the final plat would have that flexibility to go large lot and or small lot so that we can go 2-unit, 4-unit, 6-unit, some row house stuff. So
okay.
Staying flexible is our desire. So.
And same with, I believe it's lot 1 up in the top corner. I know they were looking for potentially more density there, too.
We're looking at, we're going to try to maximize the 43 dwelling units an acre, 192 units on that parcel. We still have to get an architect on board and go through those site layouts and make sure that that all works. But that's our desire. So.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Mr. Calkins? Alder Carter.
Now, can you show where the park is going to be?
That's the green area right here. And the tree line, existing tree line runs through right here. Okay. So this area will be wooded, and we need to do a tree survey to determine which trees are valuable and which ones are box elders.
Right. So the access to the park is?
There'll be a bike path that comes from Ringer Road that'll go along the stormwater ponds on top of the berm and would come out in this location.
Okay.
So once we're in the park and all these streets, this is all frontage that can be access to the park, and there'll be access from the backside on that bike trail.
Okay. And then I think the last time you were here, you said something about it. The next group of land is going to be developed sometime in the future. So you would have that street go straight through, some conversation with them about access to the park or no?
There's the opportunity to expand the park with what's in the neighborhood plan.
Okay.
If more land's needed, I think this is adequately sized, 5 acres or close to it, for park department, but it could get bigger when this developer moves forward.
So just the gold part is the duplexes or multifamily unit, the gold color versus the yellow?
These guys are just smaller single-family lots, the gold ones. That's in reaction to the 20 lots of 60 feet or less per smaller in frontage.
Okay.
They're all larger than 6,000 square feet, but they'd all be 60 or smaller.
Any additional questions, Mr. Calkins? Thank you, sir. Why don't you leave the map up for a little while?
Sure.
I'll close the public hearing. Questions of staff? Mr. Cantrell.
I guess just a question for Mr. Parks. You've seen this revised proposal. Is this consistent with your thoughts on what you were expecting?
It's an earnest step in a better direction. I don't think it's quite the variety that we would have anticipated in terms of mixing within blocks or getting smaller lots in subdivision. But it's definitely more variety than what we've seen previously. And I think the Plan Commission, it would be okay for the Plan Commission to approve it based on working through the final details of something that looks like this, because as Mr. Calkins pointed out, the non-lot one TRU one lots would probably look more like what the preliminary plat that was in your packets looked like. If there were any opportunities after this meeting to maybe shift around some of the 60-foot wide lots, I think we'd like the opportunity to discuss it with the applicant. As condition 11 is written, they're 60 feet wide, but they're greater than 6,000 square feet in area, so we would probably, if the Planning Commission was so inclined, maybe need to make that condition more flexible if this is the direction that the Planning Commission would like to see the project go. But the applicant and Mr. Calkins have been very good to work with in recent weeks, and we would look forward to the opportunity to continue working with them between tonight and recording of the subdivision if the Planning Commission feels that this project meets the mark or is very close to it.
Mr. Cantrell, does that conclude your questions?
Yes, thanks.
Anyone else? Then do we have a motion? Mr. Cantrell?
I'll move approval of the rezoning and the subdivision plats with a slight adjustment to condition 11 that in the last sentence the 20 lots shall not exceed 60 feet in width and approximately 6,000 feet in area, if that's adequate for staff.
I think we got a nod yes on that.
Okay.
All right. Is there a second to the motion, Ms. Berger? Further discussion?
I think that this plat is much improved from what we saw at our previous meeting, and I guess I would hope that the developer would work with staff to come up with a little bit more interesting arrangement of the small lots, integration of the small lots into the larger lots. I think this is certainly a step in the right direction, as Mr. Parks indicated, and I think this is a nice addition to the city of Madison. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Ms. Berger next.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what Commissioner Cantrell said, and also just to thank the applicant for, you know, being willing. I know last time we were struggling with this, and you came up and offered to refer it, and that was really helpful. So thank you for doing that and taking the time.
Alder Zellers?
And I just wanted to note that I appreciate an effort being made to save good trees, and that I hope that you'll work diligently to make sure that all are safe that can be. So thank you.
Anyone else? Then all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe that takes us to item 17, Legistar 45801, a conditional use to construct an auto repair station at 4645 Verona Road. And the staff report is from Mr. Parks.
Thank you again, Chairman, members of the Commission. Briefly, 4645 is a request to develop an approximately 7,700 square foot, one-story auto repair business on a vacant approximately one-acre lot. It's a unique parcel located on the easterly or southerly, depending on your orientation, frontage road of the Verona Road Expressway. On the southwest side of the city, near where a roundabout was recently constructed under the expressway to circulate the new frontage roads that were completed just last year for that project. The proposal places the one-story building in the southwestern corner of the site and develops the rest of the site with parking. It is a planned multi-use site shared with a now vacant Walgreens store in a multi-tenant commercial building, which are addressed on Verona Road, but are primarily accessed off of Atticus Way, east of the site. This is a conditional use for an auto repair business in the commercial center district. This is primarily a tire sales business, but the form of the building and the automotive nature of it suggested to the zoning administrator that this was an auto repair business, even if in a lighter form than conventional. Staff has reviewed the request and believes that the Plan Commission can find the conditional use standards met. We do not feel that the site would have an adverse impact on surrounding properties. However, it should be noted that this site is part of a larger area that is recommended for community mixed use in the 2006 Comprehensive Plan Generalized Future Land Use Maps. And that recommendation follows a recommendation in the Allied Drive Dunn's Marsh Physical Improvements Plan, which was prepared in 2005 in anticipation of the WISDOT project that was completed last year. This was a sort of proactive stance by the cities of Madison and Fitchburg to talk about improving access into the area. And as a corollary to that, there were some modest land use recommendations included in that plan, including that this site be transformed into more of a neighborhood commercial center and less of a highway-oriented commercial center like that area has historically been over the last 50 going on 60 years. So the proposed use could be seen as not being entirely consistent with that recommendation. Both the building form and the proposed use are not necessarily right in the wheelhouse of what you would customarily see in a community mixed use area or a neighborhood community center. But that said, staff could also see that this is a greater economic utilization of a vacant site that was previously used as an auto title loan business, and it would be an investment in an area that has not recently seen a whole considerable amount of investment right along the frontage road. So if the Plan Commission can find that conditional use standard 9 is met, due consideration of the recommendations of the Comprehensive Plan and the LI Drive Dunn's Marsh Physical Improvements Plan, then it can recommend approval of the project. And I'd be happy to answer questions after the public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. I will open the public hearing. We have one registrant, Todd Mosher, 1245 East Deal Road, Naperville, Illinois, in support, wishing to speak, representing Discount Tire Company.
Good evening. Yeah. Well, thank you, Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Todd Mosher. I'm with Ari Smith National. We're at 1245 East Steel Road in Naperville, Illinois. I am representing Discount Tire Company on the proposed development of a new store at 4645 Verona Road. Tim discussed, this is currently a vacant site. It was actually used as staging for the Verona Road project. So if you go out there today, there's still a lot of debris on site left over from the construction activities out there. It's also a very challenging site. We found, even though it used to be occupied by the title and loan building, there's no electric or gas service to the site anymore due to all the construction, so we're going to have to extend that in. And we have on our site some easements relating to a roller skating rink that is behind the facility, where they have driveways and parking lots at and extending over, encroaching onto our property. So, and there's a grade change of about 10 feet, too. So there's a lot of things going on a one-acre site. But this is part of a multi-use site. We're going to be sharing access with the former Walgreens store and the adjacent retail building. Discount Tire is a tire dealer. We do retail sale of tires and wheels, and we do the installation. There's no auto service at all to the vehicle itself. Used tires that come off the vehicles are stored inside the building, and they're stored there and recycled by a licensed hauler that comes and picks them up on a regular basis. And there's no outdoor storage of any of the tires or anything like that. We do have a trash enclosure, of course, that's fully masonry and matches the building. And we have, it'll be a double, it'll be a recycle and a trash canisters within that enclosure. In general, we've read the staff report, and we think it's very comprehensive, very thorough, and we only have a small issue with two items in the staff report, items number 2 and 3, and I'd like to just briefly discuss both of those. Item 2 was a recommendation to have glass installed in the overhead doors. And we have done this before. We have the client has a problem with this because of, number one, security. They've had issues where they've had glass and doors before, and that's an easy point of access to get to very expensive.
Can you summarize in about another minute?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
And the energy code doesn't allow for a lot of glass in those doors, but they can do like one row of glass in the doors if absolutely necessary. We would appreciate consideration to not have that. The doors aren't facing the street, and we just don't know if there's a lot to see inside other than a vehicle getting worked on or tires stored on racks. The item 3 was asking for some glass on the back side of the building. There's a 9-foot high retaining wall there in the driveway, and then a guardrail and a chain link fence that goes up to about 13 feet above our floor level. So you can see the top part of our building there easily. We provided glass on that side of the building up toward the front. I think the staff report was recommending more glass, and we'd like to ask, again, it's all storage back there in the back of the building, so there's nothing to be seen on the inside other than tires on racks. So looking for some discussion or consideration on item number 3.
Thank you. Does that wrap it up?
Yes. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Okay. And questions? Alder King?
Could you turn your thing over and just show us what condition 3 related to?
I'm sorry, I should have done that. So on the west elevation of the building, which is adjacent to the road that's going up to the roller rink, there's that guardrail and the chain link fence. I stuck an orange line on here that kind of represents the grade of that road without the guardrail on top of it, without the chain link fence that keeps people from falling off the edge. So So really the back of the building here where we have some utilities and meters and things like that is very well screened at the lower level. At the upper level, obviously, it will be visible, but it's not really facing a public street. You can arguably see it from Verona Road if you look carefully, but there's a building next door, and it's really not the primary facade of the building. And the full inside, the back end of the building is all tire storage all the way up to the ceiling. So there's not a lot to see in there. It's not that we were unwilling to work with the design of the building and with staff on something else here, but we did put the glass up at the storefront where the street is, and we wrapped it around that corner of the building there. And in there is a nice showroom, and it'll be lit, even though the store hours are only until 6 o'clock at night. It'll be lit during the evening hours until they close. So it's just a question of where we're going to put glass and how that gets done and what if it really is something that's absolutely necessary or just a recommendation. We obviously think the building design is nice the way it is, so just looking for some consideration on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Shepard?
Hi. Just a quick question, and I'm just throwing this out as something maybe to think about or consider. In terms of the roof, is there any way to make it maybe more residential, maybe have a pitch or anything on the roof? I'm just asking.
No, but what we've done is, because we have rooftop units on there, we've actually raised the parapet walls up around the edges for screening purposes of the rooftop units.
So the design right there is for functionality. You have mechanical units on the roof and so any other sort of design change would take away from that functionality of the building.
We've had buildings before where you can see we have some awnings on the building where we've done those in more of like a steel awning or something, and so we've varied up the awnings, but the roof of the building is obviously very functional for the units and the mechanical system.
Okay, so you've tried to soften the general appearance of the awnings and that.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Alder Carter?
Yeah, so you are sharing the driveway with Walgreens, but you are behind the check cashing place. Is that what you said?
So the Walgreens building is right here.
Mm-hmm.
This building back here, sort of behind the Walgreens, is a multi-tenant building. I don't know the tenant mix in there, but there's probably five or six tenants in that building, as I recall.
Yep.
And the check cashing, well, it used to be here, but it's gone now because the state took the building and condemned the right, for right-of-way purposes, condemned the building and built another frontage road.
So how much visibility are you going to have from around the road?
From the main road or from the frontage road? So the main road is up here. There,
it's not, elevated,
not right?
It's hard to get down to the frontage road.
It's a challenging spot to be in for sure. So visibility will be good once you get to the frontage road, but from on top, I did have some brief discussions with staff about the possibility of having a higher freestanding sign. Which didn't go over too well, so we had.
I'm sure it didn't. I'm just wondering, and maybe it's just not feasible, but I would just think that the Walgreens site, at least what I'm seeing here, would probably be a better location for you.
It's unfortunately not available to us. I've heard it's been spoken for.
We'll just have to unspoke it. Okay. And how tall is that retaining wall? Because I know that's a difficult terrain over there.
It is. And actually, the installation of this wall is going to be even trickier. So this wall really starts here and goes all the way around. Now, of course, it starts at 0 feet high, but then it builds up to about 10 feet high.
And then right behind you is the roller skating rink.
Parking lot. So the parking lot goes almost all the way to that property line, and then their driveway, you can see it actually is over. I don't know if you can see it from where you're at, but it's actually approaches onto our property.
Okay.
So trying not to undermine
that's
that wall while we're building a I mean, undermine the driveway while we're building a wall is going to be challenging. It may have to be a sheet pile wall or something like that.
Thank you. Yes. Anyone else? And thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing. Questions of staff? Seeing there are no questions, Jim, Mr. O.
I just question, what is your rationale for wanting windows on that driveway side, I guess the back side? If the storage is all tires, was it just for daylighting the building, or was there really a purpose for that?
Daylighting and getting some light out of the building. Other than right at that northwestern corner, it's going to be a pretty dark facade. And this is a unique notch that Mr. Mosier was pointing to in that it is set back from the frontage road. And right at the frontage road, you might not have an appreciation of those windows, but as you go into the site and have a little bit of light coming out of the site and possibly some light going into the building, even if it is, you know, passive daylighting. We suggested translucent panels. We suggested clear story windows. It just means that the building is not a blank wall along most of its length. The physical improvements plan has some very interesting ideas for how some of these sites might develop in the future and how circulation in this area may look a little bit differently. The folks that own Fast Forward have a very large swath of future Atticus Way extending right through their site should something change with it in the future. Otherwise, continue skating away. And then, likewise, along the west side of the building, there is a suggestion in the physical improvements plan that talks about possibly realigning Red Arrow Trail to run along the western edge of the building, which may require something different to happen with the daycare center and or the McDonald's to the west. Now, those are recommendations. They're not officially mapped. Whether or not they would ever come to fruition is an open question, but it's quite possible that that western wall may not be as invisible long-term as it certainly may be initially. And then on the point about adding windows into or translucent panels into the overhead doors on the eastern facade, quite frankly, we think that the building would look better with more permeability facing the parking lot, not less. We would accept, you know, glass inserts on some of those horizontal sections, but we know of other auto repair businesses. In fact, I think a Discount Tire over off of Junction Road has big glass overhead doors. And so if it's okay there, I would certainly think, as we're considering the recommendations in the neighborhood plan, et cetera, that it would be okay here too.
Ms. Berger. Ms. Berger?
Yeah, you ended up kind of getting to most of what I was going to ask about. I guess when I look at the back, so I agree on the front, on the garage doors, I think it would look a lot better with glass. But the back, I know we see some buildings come to us that are literally just, you know, straight, nothing going on. But there are some columns and some architectural interest here. You think even with that, like this wasn't something that was just recently proposed. This is something that you're aware of, having kind of these architectural features, and we still think that glass, you still think the glass should be back there.
Increasing permeability along that westerly, I'm calling it sidewall, because we're considering the north facade, the front, but it certainly has back-like features to it. That western wall has looked the way it's shown there pretty much from go. And so despite that, we felt that, you know, possibly just adding some more permeability into that wall would be good. But I frankly, if I was being asked to trade, I would want to see the overhead doors improved more so than the western side wall.
Thank you.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Parks, just two quick questions regarding, one in terms of the west wall. I'll just state these real quick, and then you can respond. In terms of the west wall and the suggestion for, you know, glass or windows there, let me just make sure this is clear. This isn't sort of your recommendation off sort of the top of your head. This is a standard that, in terms of planning and looking at development, that you try to be consistent in. I'm just mentioning this because there have been other projects that have come before us, and that's always been sort of the approach, is to avoid large, blank, sort of solid walls.
That's correct. Right.
Sort of. Okay. Yeah. Then the other issue I would just, in terms of the glass doors, you may not know the answer to this, but are those sort of anti-theft glass? Can they prevent someone literally, like, kicking those in? I'm just curious in terms of. The reason I mention this is because my dad used to paint cars, and I would show up to work with him sometimes Monday morning, and the doors on the garage doors would be kicked in. Somebody would get in there and steal the stuff, you know. And that happens at garages, you know. They, mm-hmm. you know, they wait. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we want to sort of, you know, have someone put a development in that would be less secure. So if in terms of the standard of the glass is such that it provides adequate security, I think that goes a long way toward maybe supporting that recommendation.
We're certainly not trying to create more work for the police department either.
Yeah, okay.
We would view whatever windows they put in there to be whatever level of security that the developer needed, we certainly would support. I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb, not having perhaps the same amount of familiarity as Mr. Miller here yourself about these sorts of businesses, but my guess is if somebody wants to get into this building, they're going to get into it. And whether that's just up the same facade, breaking through the aluminum storefront glass, or going through the man door into the lobby, or smashing one of the panes on a glass overhead door, they're going to get in. And quite honestly, when you think about what they're going to be trying to bring out of here, it's going through the lobby door, or it's going through a broken storefront door or window pane, because it's a tire, and it's not going to go through the small panes on a glass overhead door. And so, it unfortunately, if somebody has nefarious intent, the overhead doors, whether they're steel doors or have glass inserts or they're all glass, those parties are going to do it. And so, we're looking to, you know, for the aesthetics here, but obviously we're going to give a nod to the security as well.
Yeah. Well, you'll just continue to work with the applicant on this. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Ms. Snyder?
Yeah, I'd just like to add a little bit to that. I mean, we're really trying to look long-term with this building as well. I think we're excited to see the investment in this area, and we envision this building as something that will be here for a long time, perhaps beyond its use as a tire facility as well. So we're looking at it as a building in a neighborhood and thinking about, you know, the many times across the city that, you know, the amounts of glass comes up as an important design issue. I think that that's important for the Plan Commission to consider as well.
Thank you. Ms. Berger next.
I'm sorry to ring in again, but it just occurred to me that maybe, I'm not sure, is Alder Cheeks here tonight to speak on this? Or I guess I was going to ask staff if we had feedback, because when I was reading the staff report, you know, the one thing that was really sticking out to me was that 2005 Allied Dunn physical improvement plan that you discussed a little bit in the staff report, and how, you know, there might have been different plans for this area, but it seems like, and I guess I was just wondering if we had any feedback from the neighborhood or the Alder on how they feel about this
I know that Alder Cheeks asked Mr. Mosier to appear before, I believe it was the Allied Dunn's Marsh Neighborhood Association, back in early January, and he did so. Mm-hmm. And all I know, after Alder Cheeks waived the 30-day pre-application notification period for the project, We haven't heard anything from the Neighborhood Association, from the Alder, or any of the surrounding property owners related to this proposal. So,
nothing negative or positive?
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hagen now.
Just going to add, so I've driven past the Discount Tire location out in Middleton, and I got to say, looking at that building versus looking at this, the glass doors really do break up the whole facade of that building, and I think it really does add a lot to making it just look a little more pleasing. So, I think that would be a pretty important part of this building, as long as you can make sure that it's still being safe. People aren't breaking it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagenow. Anyone else? Then is there a motion? Mr. Cantrell?
I move approval of the conditional use permit, finding it consistent with the standards, including standard number 9. And also keeping with the conditions as recommended by staff on 2 and 3. And if I get a second, I'll talk to those.
Seconded by Alder King. Mr. Cantrell, go ahead.
I drove out to this site. I agree with the with the tire center here. You know, it's sad that we can't get the uses that the neighborhood plan is recommending, but this is a difficult site, and I think that the transportation network out in that area is very complex, and I think that a tire center for this site at this time is appropriate. Conditions two, I guess I agree with staff that the garage windows should be installed, but they provided at least some flexibility within that they prefer total windows within the garage doors, but I think there's some flexibility there that you know, I think that safety and break-ins, you know, may be somewhat of a concern, but having, you know, surveillance cameras and those sorts of things, I think can alleviate some of that. But I think windows on the garage doors are appropriate. The third condition with the windows on the west side, I agree with staff again that we have to look at the long term. There's going to be a lot of redevelopment in that area. And that although the terrain and the grade somewhat diminishes the need for windows there, but I think that it is a very visible elevation, and I think that again staff gave some flexibility in what those windows can be, and that's why I'm supporting that condition as well.
Thank you. Alder King.
I just want to use this opportunity to say that nearly 8 years ago, we had this, the Plan Commission had the same debate. I was not yet an alder. On the addition to the Kohl's store on the west side to add a stock room on the, I guess that would be the north side of the building. And I remember flipping through the channels and getting stuck on the city channel, watching the debate on the Plan Commission where you required them to add windows to a stock room on the side of the building, which, by the way, just so anyone knows, I have asked because I used to work at that store when I was in grad school. Those stock room windows are completely covered up on the inside by stock on shelves. But anyway, neither here nor there. I just want to know that I've come full circle and I have now apparently been beaten into submission, and I will support condition number 3.
Thank you, Alder King. Anyone else? Then all those in favor of the motion say aye. I'm sorry, Alder Carter.
Are we talking a full glass garage door or windows in the garage door?
I'll go back to Mr. Cantrell.
Yeah.
Well, The condition is flexible in that regard. And if you read it, I think that staff says they prefer a full glass door. But I think that I guess I'm leaving up that to staff to negotiate that with the developer. If the commission feels differently, then maybe a friendly amendment or other amendment should be brought forward.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Alder Carter.
Thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome. Anyone else, then? Then all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. Thank you all. I believe that now takes us all the way back to item number 7. Is that correct? Item 7, Registrar 46304, Plan Commission discussion on potential amendments to the High Point Raymond Neighborhood Development Plan. Dan McAuliffe from staff will present this to us.
Hold on just one moment.
Looks like it's on. Yeah.
Well, last time I was here, the projector didn't work, so we had to make do. Beginning to get a very strange sense that this room and I don't get along.
Right, Dave's left.
Yep. There we are. Thanks.
Repetition was the success.
All right. Again, my name is Dan McCall. For those who don't know me, my goal for this presentation is to go through about one-third of the speed that I did the last time and hopefully get a little bit more dialogue. But right now, we're with the High Point Raymond, we're in the middle of an update. We're still at the beginning phase. The High Point plan area is generally bound by Pleasant View on the west, McKee on the south, High Point Road and Elder Park on the east, and Valley View Road on the west, or I'm sorry, on the north. It's about 1,300 acres. This is the plan as it was originally adopted. As you can see, a couple of the big ideas, it's predominantly a residential NDP. It did feature the Ice Age Trail coming through and a green space connection up to Elver Park. One of the major transportation recommendations of this plan was the realignment of Raymond Road to meet up with Midtown and the extension of High Point through the site. So why are we updating? Well, this is one of the city's older NDPs. It's about 20 years old. About half of the areas planned for development are still undeveloped. Several new developments have occurred since adoption, and the plan needs to address those and accommodate their unique street systems. Also, one thing that we need to take into consideration is how development pressures have changed since 1997. I'm sure you're aware the city is projected to grow by about 100,000 residents over the next 40 years. There's very strong demand right now for apartments citywide. Vacancy rate is about 3.5%. As you may know, 5% is considered healthy. So right now we have kind of a shortage of apartments that is driving up rents. Also, we're starting to see some generational shifts. Millennials are entering the housing market more and more every day. However, a lot of them aren't buying single-family homes the way previous generations had, whether that's because they're choosing a different housing product or financially unable at this time. Also, we're seeing a lot of boomers downsize into more walkable or into smaller dwelling units, either apartments or smaller single-family homes. According to the city's housing report, the strongest demand that we're seeing citywide is in within compact and walkable neighborhoods. So a couple of other things that is important to recognize. Now, certainly Epic isn't the only reason for the change, but it's hard to ignore the company's influence. In 1995, the city had just moved into its new building on Tokay Boulevard with 133 employees. Now they have about 10,000 in Verona. The map on the left is something that we got from a census website called On the Map. It links employment locations and residential locations. So the heat map, the higher intensities are where greater concentrations of Epic employees live. Actually, I can't say Epic employees. Employees who work in the area where Epic is located. We don't have direct payroll data, but we can generalize that. So the Midtown Commons area has the second highest concentration outside of the Isthmus. So this is certainly influencing their traffic demand, or their growth demand. On the right, one of the more interesting things, too, is within the context of this NDP update, there actually is existing transit service that goes past the site. And a lot of times with NDPs, we're talking about maybe transit will get here in 20 years. Right now we have bus lines that go out to Epic. They don't have any stops in the current location, but it does seem immediately more feasible in the short term than the very long term. Also, up at the top, you'll notice that this is the western terminus of the BRT line. Along with the BRT, if it's implemented, we would envision some sort of route re-envisioning because it would not be the most effective solution to put a high-frequency, high-speed transit at the end of a line and then not have any feeder service in there. So we could certainly expect some level of transit service down Pleasant View. Also talking to Metro about what they see as transit opportunities, High Point is one that comes along, as well as Raymond. The green lines are where we have the existing local service through this route as well. So currently the closest comes on Raymond right there. There is school service operated by Metro in this area, but no regular transit. So our focus areas as we look forward are predominantly the three large undeveloped areas, the top being the Mullins and Tice properties, B would be the Marty and surrounding properties, and C, kind of the Five Points area. We want to take a look at the uses and the housing mix, making sure they still make sense, how well the street networks work, are there sufficient park spaces. Obviously, as we change land uses, we want to make sure it's still adequate with the parkland dedication requirements. Stormwater management requirements have been significantly increased since 1997, and they were not incorporated into the existing plan, so that's certainly something that we need to take into consideration. We also do a lot more proactive planning right now for biking and transit use, so we want to make sure that we are thinking about those elements when we are developing the plan rather than reactively putting them through existing neighborhoods. So for the land use, there's a couple questions that we really wanted to ask. First, one of the more pressing ones, I shouldn't say pressing, but the most obvious ones are the corners of Midtown and Pleasant View and Midtown and High Point. Right now, the plans are showing low-density residential with a block pattern that indicates the development would typically back up to it. We certainly think that there's more opportunity for a more appropriate land use than low-density residential, possibly a mixed-use commercial or a higher-density residential in these areas. In the north area, we also see a fairly the densities of residential are fairly segregated. We have a fairly big chunk of higher density here and a medium density here. They tend not to be integrated around amenities such as parks, transit, and walkable commercial areas as we would do them now. And the street networks don't provide a lot of connectivity. The park space tends to happen a lot in a backyard configuration where there's a lot of homes backing up to the park. One of the observations that we made was that parks that have more frontage have more visibility, they get more use, they're perceived as more public. Also talking to parks, they have some concerns about homes encroaching into park space. You know, if there's a street or some sort of clear divide between properties and park space, they don't have to worry about those adjacent properties encroaching. And down in the Five Points area, where McKee and Pleasant View and Raymond occur, right now the area is planned for, again, a low-density residential next to the Meritor property. It would be fairly isolated. We're wondering if this use makes sense, given the isolated nature and the some of the connections or the lack of connections that would occur in that area. We think an alternative land use might be worth considering. Also in that Five Points area, there is a 300-foot open space buffer that was adopted as part of the 1997 plan and was incorporated into the intergovernmental agreement with Verona. That intergovernmental agreement has expired, so it allows us to go back and look at that. Does that still make sense? Our initial reaction is maybe it doesn't make sense, but it's certainly something that we can look at. When we have that big space, it's effectively pushing buildings and people back away from potentially transit corridors and also pushing those buildings into areas where we might think that preservation makes more sense than directly adjacent to these major corridors. Looking at the internal street network, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this one, but it doesn't really support connectivity the way we would want to see it. For example, not a lot of connectivity north-south through here. There's a drainage way that certainly could be crossed, but we're not showing any connections. The streets almost seem to avoid lining up with existing streets on the arterials and don't pass through the site. If there is going to be, you know, we're certainly not trying to encourage cut-through traffic, but if people want to go across that site, GPS will tell them exactly how to get there. And since everybody's, or a vast majority of people are traveling with Google Maps in their pocket, people will find ways to get through. Looking at some of the external transportation issues, just highlighting a couple of Jeffy Trail, Raymond Road at the Ice Age Trail, and the Five Points, Wellness Way, Stratton. I'll go through these a little more in depth. But Jeffy Trail is certainly one of the more, probably the bigger issues that we're seeing. There's a lot of interest in this topic. So a little bit of history. Jeffy Trail was incorporated into the original NDP amendment in 1997. In 1997, it turned west and connected up to Pleasant View. In 2005, the NDP was amended, and the Jeffy Trail was the extension was extended to Raymond. Through a couple subsequent plats, the right-of-way was extended. In 2012, the city acquired the former Smithies property. The Smithies had donated the property to the Audubon Society with the purpose of selling that property to fund conservation efforts elsewhere. The city looked at this as an opportunity for a kind of a win-win-win situation where we would be able to extend the street in accordance with the plan, extend needed infrastructure improvements, as well as create more park space than what would be for the residents other than what the neighborhood plan showed. The plat of that was approved in 2013, and it had been included in the previous capital budgets, but it has been deferred at this time. One thing that we do want to mention is that the closure of Raymond Road at Five Points would occur prior to any construction taking place on this, if it is to occur. That's scheduled to happen this year. And that would further limit the potential for through traffic going through Jeffy Trail. This is the way it looks right now. So it is just past the existing developments. Or there's a home and some multifamily is here. The green is the bike path that currently exists, and this is the right-of-way that is platted. So certainly in 2014, when the city improved some of the Ice Age Trail, they thought it would be a good idea to add a bike path up to the existing neighborhood as a temporary amenity. About 300 feet of this path does exist in the current road alignments. But, you know, that is certainly something that if it's decided that it makes sense to extend the street, we could certainly realign that. That could be included as part of the design. So some other transportation issues. In the current NDP, it's shown as Raymond Road through the Ice Age Trail was envisioned for removal. Right now, it gets a little more complicated, as we mentioned, with the construction of Pleasant View and High Point. We mentioned that Raymond Road would be closed, but also this right-in, right-out that was planned. That can't happen because of the grade-separated nature of that intersection. So if Raymond Road were to go away, we'd effectively be creating a very long cul-de-sac on Meritor and Wellness Way. Right now, Wellness Way, I think, or this road is planned for construction, I believe, this year, along with the removal of Raymond at that intersection. And lastly, in the southern direction, we just wanted to have a discussion about the appropriateness of the connecting Stratton Way. When the NDP was originally adopted, Ice Age Falls was shown as green space. It had some text that said if it could not be acquired for preservation as green space, it should revert to a low-density residential. What the NDP did not include was kind of a backup plan providing connectivity guidance. So we have kind of a piecemeal section here where we have Stratton Way that was platted and built, a easement through the Meritor property that was granted, and now a connection over to Raymond. So we have every part of a road or every part of a right-of-way, but we've never had the conversation about whether or not that road should exist. And given the land use mixes that could occur, this is an appropriate time to do that. And lastly, the last transportation issue we wanted to call attention to was the extension of Midtown as it approaches Elver Park. Again, this was the original vision was to vacate these roads through the open space corridors. However, if Elver Park is planned for expansion, it certainly might be a benefit to the park to have a southern access. I don't believe it would detract from the open space character because it would be a very low volume road. And just to want to let everybody know, we are thinking about bike connections and transit from the very beginning. We don't want to be kind of shoehorning these in at the end. A couple opportunities that we see, and I apologize, the diagrams aren't the clearest, but the darker green are the darker solid are existing trails, the lighter green are planned, and the blue is existing on-street routes. So one of the things that we see that stuck out right away is that this northern connection from High Point across to Pleasant View and continuing, I can't recall the name of that street. This street extends for about 2 miles, either planned or constructed. The opportunity, as well as has a Olson Elementary right here. We see this as a great opportunity for a bike boulevard, a low-volume street that would be more comfortable than a bike lane on adjacent arterials. Also, when we think about safe routes to school, if there's any crossing, kids going to school at Olson, this would be a great route for them as well. So we're thinking about that, how we have the potential for an off-street crossing through the neighborhood south to across to Elver and down over to the east, as well as looking at opportunities for on- and off-street connections north through the neighborhood. Here's a little bit about our timeline. Again, we're at the very beginning of the process. tonight's meeting would probably conclude our kind of information gathering phase. We want to talk to stakeholders before we start drawing concepts, just because we want to make sure we're on the same page. So after this, we will begin developing concepts. We would imagine that those would be released to a public open house, probably according to the schedule, since April and May, it's probably closer to May, given where we are right now. We would come back to the Plan Commission for your feedback, and depending upon how comfortable you are, we'd move into the official committee and commission review process. So this time I'm happy to take questions and comments.
You know, I think I'm going to wait to take questions until after we hear from the neighbors.
I do also have one written comment that I received via email, and I can hand these out.
Give one a couple up here, too. Okay. registrant on this is Dave Handowski, 18 Chautauqua Trail. Neither supporting nor opposing, wishing to speak.
Hi, good evening. I'm David Handowski. I am the chair of the resident ad hoc committee that was formed to help with the overall relook or redesign of the neighborhood development plan. I won't go through all the recommendations that we gave everybody the last time. I think everybody has a copy, I'm assuming. I just wanted to provide just a couple basic comments. You know, over the last 20 years, everybody's talking about the change of paradigms that we've had with respect to housing, the types of housing, where it's done, how it's done, how it connects to open spaces, bike trails, and things like that. You know, the one thing that really hasn't changed is mathematics and engineering, and I think that's where some of the disconnect begins to come into play between what residents like and what they feel and how they value their neighborhood versus what, you know, connectivity and VMTs and access mean. And I think that's where we're looking to begin to work together to begin to accommodate all the things that basically Madison has done to invest in the things that people find value in, the open space, the parks, the bike trails. And it's not just about the ease of access. People are willing to take time out of their day, you know, and take a minute or 2 minutes out of their time to basically transit a different way out of a neighborhood in order to protect the things that they like a lot. And one of the things that we talked about before was, you know, we just wanted to see that the topology really makes sense, that there's a sense of order to things, and that the things that that people are valuing, you know, are preserved. So when I look at some of the internal connections and things too, I can see where there's going to be concern from residents about that. You know, for the sake of a connection being made, there's going to be a loss of things that they value. So that's one of the things that we just wanted to get across in our last presentation, and that's just one of the things that we want to leave with you today, is that I do think there are some changing paradigms. It's hard to change the paradigm of mathematics because math is math, but I just want you all to consider that there are some other things that come into play and take that into consideration as we go forward. So I'll look forward to seeing everything in May, and I'll be very happy to work with Dan and his team and you guys to accommodate that.
Hang on. Let's see if there are any questions for Mr. Handowski.
And I have two of my peers from the committee here as well, so very happy to answer questions.
Nobody seems to have a question, but I think it would be helpful if you summarize your position on Jeffy Trail, just because I think that's the most contentious issue we have.
As I stated last time, the contention is not really with residents. There's probably 450 people between the area that's north of Midtown Road and Midtown Commons and the Jeffy area. They really like that particular area that they were showing with the bike trail. You know, they are going to see a significant loss from their perspective on their most significant and valued asset. They use that as a park. There's kids there all the time. They walk there. They bike there. You know, they have lunches and stuff there. They have basically, you know, completely absorbed and bought into the concept of valuing parts of the assets of your neighborhood. And to them, having, you know, this particular road extended basically destroys everything that they've been told is supposed to be important. And so from my perspective, doesn't make a lot of sense. you know, and from the residents' perspective, certainly the 450 and growing number, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And they're the ones that have said, we are willing to take 2 minutes out of our day or a minute and a half out of our day in order to transit out of the neighborhood a different way because they value that enough. And I happen to believe that is a good point.
Okay, last chance. Any other questions for Mr. Handowski? Thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you for
okay,
the time.
Questions for Mr. McAuliffe? Yes, we do. Mr. McAuliffe, you're back here. Okay, that answers the question. Do you want to answer here or there?
Okay. I'm happy to answer whoever.
Okay, Alder King.
So can you bring back the map of the Five Points area?
Sure. This one?
Yeah. So help me understand. So at the Meritor Clinic site, we're going to remove the Raymond Road access to their child and adolescent psych hospital. So they're going to build, this road's going to now service that facility, plus create another road to the east,
so
west.
Right now, they haven't made Meritor hasn't made a determination whether or not they will abandon their driveway. In talking with Meritor, you know, they see the advantages of having a single point of access, but right now they also see the advantage of the Raymond Road entry. One of the advantages they see of this site is it definitely affords the adolescent psych facility with a lot of privacy, and they value that. So it will be their decision. You know, it's not something that we would say they have to vacate it. The black dotted line right here is the only section that would be constructed this summer.
But, if we really do remove that section of Raymond Road.
Oh, yeah, they would have to.
They have to go in a different way.
Yes. If we remove that section of Raymond Road, they would have to pull access off Meritor Way and Wilmus.
And you're proposing in that tan area essentially low density residential.
At this point, we're not proposing anything. This is what the existing plan says.
But the question is,
yeah,
that or a more commercially oriented use.
This one is probably the most challenging because when we look at this, there's not an obvious, oh, this is what makes sense there. It's going to have challenging access. It is isolated, but it is visible, and so as we think down the list of uses that might be appropriate in that context, I mean, for me personally, office is one that sticks out as, well, this one might work, or a similar use to the clinic. But, you know, I certainly think we want to have a discussion because we don't know what the market is for office out there. It's kind of just, you know, what doesn't work and kind of scratching off the uses that we see have issues.
And that... the connection point from that area to Pleasant View is also a question mark, too.
That's
right?
A question mark. So it could occur, but it's something that we would need to look at in the concept of the plan or in the plan concepts.
And so this is a kind of off the wall question, but my understanding from prior discussions is that both at this intersection at Five Points. And also at Midtown and Pleasant View, there is a, quote, historical house that sort of narrows our potential redevelopment opportunities. Is that a correct assessment?
I have heard about, I believe, the Mary Bigley's. She has there's a old house at one of, I can't recall offhand which one it is. But yeah,
there's an unimproved
yes, it's,
house.
I what I understand is
in quotes.
Yeah, no electrical. Very rustic.
Where they wreath on the door. There's a wreath on the door. Sorry, people. I drive by it a lot. All right, and then the last question. So in Stratton Way at the end. So the question mark really depends on what ends up being the use that we plan for at that intersection, which is the question mark.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you gonna? Is it gonna be this body that's gonna discuss and make a decision on the use, or is planning gonna kind of come up with a pretty solid recommendation and come to us, since it's kind of on the spectrum pretty wide right now?
Yeah, I think our goal is to create either a concept or a series of alternatives for you guys to take a look at. Our goal with tonight is to kind of get some initial feedback to help us generate, to kind of constrain the universe of alternatives that we could develop. This one certainly seems tricky, and I don't think it's going to take, you know, drawing one alternative. I think we'll have to draw three or four and then debate the merit, the pros and cons of each of those. But I think we certainly would bring back a series of alternatives, and maybe we could have one that would be, you know, staff's preferred alternative.
Thanks.
Alder Zellers?
Just a couple of things. Could you bring back the slide where you have the circles of the higher density?
Sure.
Yeah. And now tell me again what your concept is where the two circles are.
We just see these intersections as having more opportunity than low-density residential. So I think we see probably a stronger opportunity for mixed use and commercial at Pleasant View in Midtown, just given the traffic counts and the visibility and the fact that intersection currently exists.
Uh-huh.
But also with the Marty Farm, we see the same potential. We do have the existing mixed-use node at Midtown Commons. It never really developed the way, or the commercial elements never really developed the way that it was hoped to or envisioned 20 years ago. A lot of people are citing the lack of connectivity with Raymond's to Midtown and just kind of the lack of being on a through route as one of those options. So we certainly think that there is opportunity to go a little more intense than a single-family residential, but we wanted to ask the Planning Commission where they think the most appropriate opportunities for mixed use and commercial development are.
Because I certainly would think that mixed use and commercial development would be valuable to that area, to have some things that really support the life there. So I would encourage you to go forward with that. The other question I have, you mentioned kind of in passing a bike boulevard.
Sure.
Could you just talk about that a little bit more, or what you were thinking?
Sure. And this wasn't necessarily anything, you know, this is just kind of an observation. Living on the isthmus and kind of biking the area, you know, originally we have the Capital City Trail, we have bike routes, but then we also have the bike boulevard, which is kind of this happy medium of on-street facility that's usually very direct, but also on a low volume, much more comfortable environment rather than, we do have bike lanes on East Washington, and I think we would do that again, but, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't comfortable biking next to 45,000 cars a day at 35, 40 miles an hour. You know, I think this presents the opportunity of a low-volume residential street with a speed limit of 25 miles an hour on a narrower corridor where we could share the right-of-way or have a buffered bike lane or some bigger, more robust bike facility than our typical lanes to have a nice local low-volume connection that really would bridge about 3.5 miles between the west and the east.
The only observation or caution I would have on that is experiencing the Mifflin mm-hmm. Bike Boulevard. At one point, it was a lot lower traffic
sure.
volume than it is now. And I think that when something is labeled a bike boulevard, there's a certain level of expectation. And just having a label doesn't really do it.
Sure.
So I would really urge you to think long and hard about what the goal is and make it work for the long term, if that's a direction that we're going to go.
Alder McKinney, do you want to jump in right now?
After the commission's finished, I would.
Okay. I'll come back. Push your button again, please. Ms. Berger next.
Sorry, I wanted to ask one more clarifying question, and I was zipping around on my map trying to look for it, so maybe I missed it if you mentioned it to Alder King, but back at the Five Corners, mm-hmm. There's that gray dotted line that's maybe going through the Sorry. Historic house or something. That gray one that's going on to Pleasant View,
mm-hmm.
is that being constructed now too? So that's
no.
gray and not black?
No.
But would that too be a right-in, right-out? I'm just trying to understand what, so if they're both right-in, right-out, obviously, you know, that's why we would need a some other way to get into that area?
We would have to meet with engineering to see what the constraints of the intersection are, but I think it's likely, given the proximity and the boulevarded sections, that it would be a right-in, right-out.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That helps.
Mr. Shepard, next.
Hi. Just two comments. One would be in terms of the possible Jeffy extension. And again, I know we're early in the process here, but as those discussions continue, maybe some vision in terms of if that extension were to take place, you know, what could happen on that extension. I'm thinking in terms of, are there ways to reduce light, noise pollution? Once again, it's a small strip, but it's a very sort of important and sensitive area also. Are there ways to increase safety and sort of, you know, livability in that area? So, because, you know, when you see something on a map and it says sort of extension, you know, you think, you know, 18-wheelers sort of piling through, you know, in the middle of the day or something. You know, we need something that, you know, so as these discussions continue, again, it may happen, it may not. But I think if there can be a bit more sort of, more of the options that are possible, if those can be discussed, I think that would be helpful. The second thing, just a general comment, it was maybe a couple of years ago, but I think it was the president of Viridian. He gave we were talking about one of his, he was looking at one of his developments, but he gave a great, I think, sort of an explanation about the changing patterns of human behavior in terms of, as he mentioned, sort of putting in retail, that the old way of thinking is you have a development and you just sort of smack retail or some sort of commercial node down there, and the expectation is that it would flourish. I just go back to what he said. He was such a character, too. I think he's in the south of France right now. I think he's.
His name is Jeff Rosenberg.
Okay, he was great, though. But he says he goes to the south of France every winter, so maybe he's back by now, I don't know. But he gave a great, again, that for each development, we need to look at that sort of individually, that, you know, just the old way of thinking of just having commercial and retail there, that it's going to fly, as he pointed out, that just isn't sort of the case, that we have to look at these individually. I'm just mentioning that because I thought he's very thoughtful in that, in terms of, you know, so we don't put something in that really, you know, is not going to flourish and is not consistent with new and changing, you know, shopping and living styles and everything else. So, all right, thank you.
To respond to a couple things, in terms of the design flexibility of the street, if Jeffy Trail is to go through, talking with engineering, I think we have a lot of, you know, we're not going to we don't have to follow standards. You know, we can make sure that the design of the street really encourages slow-moving traffic, could have off-street bike facilities, could have enhanced crossings. So it's not something that we're just going to run our typical 32-foot street and say, you know, a day's a day, you know, done for the day. And as far as the comment about retail, we're trying to be very sensitive to that. You know, we're aware of the changing nature of retail. I think stores are continuing to close as we speak in terms of some of the major retailers. So we think about the uses that people tend to walk to within neighborhoods, and people are almost always going to need dry cleaning, and you can't order your dry cleaning on Amazon yet. We'll see how long that lasts. But there's a certain amount of neighborhood goods and services that either don't make sense or are impossible to achieve on the Internet. I don't think anybody's ordering maybe they are ordering dinner now on the Internet, but with the drones that Amazon's bringing out, we'll see. But we do try to be sensitive to making sure that these are tailored to the neighborhood as we go through these NDP processes.
Mr. Cantrell's next.
Yeah, if you can go back to the map that has the circles, the densities again. And I don't know what type of comments you want, but I guess I'll just throw my opinions out on this map. I think you're right on target with the mixed use and higher densities at the intersection of Pleasant View and that cross street, the Midtown, and also Midtown and Raymond. I think those are, is that High Point and yeah, Raymond. I think those make sense. And having higher density and also some neighborhood services that could provide opportunities for people to walk to restaurants or ice cream shops, barber shops, those sorts of things, I think is important for those neighborhoods. Street access to parks, I think that with the increased densities, my guess is the park space will increase.
It's likely.
And having more street access than that shows, I would agree with and advocate. The better integration of densities, I would especially agree with the rectangle on the next to Pleasant View. That certainly is necessary. The other side, I guess I'm more split with that one. But I think that having some variety of housing types is what makes neighborhoods special, and what we should be striving for. The site on the Five Points, that's a very difficult site. The access is being taken away. It's surrounded by open space and wildlife areas. But I think either residential doesn't make any sense, in my opinion. Office, civic uses, institutional, maybe church, something, a large institution like that down there would make some sense. And having access to Pleasant View, I think, would be important for any type of use down there. Keeping the 300-foot buffer zone, you know, I think that's a concept that's a good idea, but I don't know if it serves a great purpose. I think having no access and appropriate landscaping and that sort of buffer, we're trying to let people know that we're moving from Verona into Madison. And I think there are ways to do that rather than distance. So I'm more flexible on. I would like for you guys to come up with some concepts that I think that might serve that purpose, but may not just be 300 feet. I mean, I'm not sure if that serves anyone's purpose. I guess that's pretty much my comments, at least on that map. But I have other comments on other maps. But
why don't you keep going?
Okay.
I think this is exactly what staff needs.
Sure. Why don't you move to your next map? That one. I was looking at that map, and I don't have it. I was amazed that your streets don't connect, and thinking, wow, I think that they missed some opportunities for street connections. And I think, obviously, those are important, especially on the north side of the neighborhood. And the access points onto Pleasant View, looking at that, I think is, again, important. Obviously, the city staff or engineering will want to limit access onto Pleasant View probably as much as possible. But I think having through access at intersections makes some sense. Let's see. I guess going to the next map then. This is the most difficult one, I think. Obviously, the most controversial for the neighborhood. I think through streets are important. The extension of Jaffe Trail, I think, should happen, in my opinion. How it's done is doing it in a sensitive way. I think it obviously is important. And when it's done is also important, the timing of it. And I think in the materials I read from the neighborhood, their concern is that you need to do it. Well, they didn't advocate doing it, but it shouldn't be done until Raymond and High Point are constructed, and Raymond is disconnected from that Five Points area. So I think that when because if it's not done in a timely manner, I think there will be an additional cut through traffic could be. So I think that and right now, I don't think it's the urgency for that street to be constructed or improved. I can see why the city would want it done so that there's not a huge population to oppose it in the future. But, you know, there's not a lot of streets within that neighborhood at this point. You look at the neighborhood plan out there, Hickory Ridge Road, it's a cul-de-sac, correct? It doesn't go north. I'm sure people living on Hickory Ridge Road
this street right here
are probably going to wake up and say, hey, I don't want that road to be connected to anyway. I'd like living on a cul-de-sac, and please, you know, terminate it. So a lot of those roads, they're concepts at this point. And I think that we're looking at concepts, and I think that, again, having through streets, in my opinion, are important for a lot of different reasons. But preserving the bike trail, or at least having a bike trail there, connecting to the huge open space area and wildlife area. This neighborhood has access to more open space, I think, than any other neighborhood, maybe unlike any other neighborhood except the ones that abut the Arboretum. I guess the last comments I have are the connections to on the Five Points area.
Ford. Oh, there you are.
I think the east-west connection to that neighborhood, I think that should be strongly considered. And the termination of Raymond Road, that may be converted into a bike trail or some sort of walking trail, but eliminating most vehicle traffic, I think, should be done with that. But those are my comments. My last one is that you talked about the Midtown Road extension, the current Midtown Road through the park. I see no reason to eliminate that at this point in time. It will provide park access. Keep it in the future. If you want to slightly adjust it, fine. But there's going to be a need for park access through that huge open space area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Alder King.
So keeping on this map, just a couple more things. On the 300-foot buffer, we're gonna probably eat into that with the giant roundabout that we're creating at that intersection anyway, right?
I believe so, yes.
So, and quite frankly, I mean, just playing municipality versus municipality, they dumped it, so we should dump it. On their side, they pretty much eliminated it. I mean, and that was part of the renegotiation in terms of what that buffer space looks like. But my understanding on the southwest corner in Verona, on the other, you know, right here, yep, that is planned in Verona to be commercial/retail, correct?
That's correct.
So, and they're moving a lot of dirt around. So I'm assuming that they are sort of preparing for that sort of use at that intersection.
Yeah, this is a somewhat unique constraint in this corner. I believe that's kind of a bathtub of a site. There's stormwater settles in the corner, and there's no real exit. So I believe their development, short of major stormwater work, would be pushed back anyways. I wasn't around when the original document was created, so I don't know if that was an idea was to match those contexts. But I think one of the things that we also mentioned that we see is on it does create challenges when we think about transit use to have everybody 300 feet back from the corridor. And then the things, you know, looking at what happened with the Meritor Clinic, it's not just the 300 feet, but it's what happens in those 300 feet. So we could anticipate...
Turkeys.
And parking. Turkey and parking.
Right there is not a lot of parking, but there's turkeys.
So, I mean, that if
and
they're
dead turkeys.
So it's if our front door, it should be a building or open space, a parking lot and building. You know, I think that's a question that the Planning Commission should answer.
Well, when I think about other areas in the city with significant traffic corridors like Pleasant View is now, I think we have sort of a unique opportunity not to overdevelop that intersection, because when you think about think about, for example, where Stoughton Road comes into East Washington. I mean, I don't know why anyone goes to any of those businesses, quite frankly, because I'm not sure, how do you get out of them? I mean, I think the last time I went to anything at that intersection was Shakey's Pizza, so that pretty much gave me a long time. This intersection is not quite as busy as that, but it is a very busy intersection with Epic. I mean, that's their main corridor out to come into the city on the west side. So, and we are spending a lot of money on that street infrastructure, mainly for through traffic. I mean, to get people out of and into Verona and the city on that side of it. And we have a lot of major development planned on the northwest side of this corridor. So I kind of echo what he said. I think that a lower traffic use, like an institutional use, makes more sense at this, where you don't necessarily need all the connectivity to get out of it. And having a single point like the Meritor Clinic has now would be an acceptable thing, because I think one of the reasons we're removing the Raymond Road access that comes in there is because it creates a lot of frustration at that intersection, and we know it's not going to survive the roundabout approach anyway. So I think that this is a great opportunity to sort of plan for the fact that this really is an intersection that just needs to move traffic through more or less, and to remove the uses pretty far from it that sort of conflict with that.
Okay.
Ben.
Do you have anything to say on Jeffy?
Not yet.
Well, this may be your last chance.
Actually, I think Jeffy Trail's an interesting problem or issue. So I'm worried on the perspective of setting the precedent that we're not going to connect our neighborhoods together. And I think there's some really valid reasons why the neighborhood is advocating for what it is. I mean, if I lived over there, it is a pretty pristine corridor with the park space and all that. But looking at from a connectivity standpoint, which we've talked about ad on infinitum here, along with all of our cul-de-sac discussions, which I think is ironic that one of the last cul-de-sacs approved is right next door on Trevor, but we did that for topography reasons, and we also did it because the connectivity was going to be on Jeffy Trail then, not on Trevor Way. So I think I would probably advocate for the extension of Jeffy Trail, but with some consideration around the timing, and also thinking about being very sensitive to where the bike path, how the bike path is integrated into that project. So I think it would be preferable for the bike path to be off street as much as possible, even in that 300-foot section, if possible, because I think that would be a lot more pleasing to the neighborhood and pleasing to sort of that corridor and all that green space that's around it. I think we've heard I think this is a difficult intersection. I mean, it's a difficult part of the city for connectivity, and I think that eliminating the Raymond Road sort of corridor through the south side of that really reinforces the need to have some neighborhood connectivity through that. And Jeffy Trail right now is one of those links, and I think we should make sure that we explore it, but do it very sensitively.
Thank you. I see that there are more lights up. I think maybe I've elicited something. I'm hoping that people will comment on Jeffy, because I think this is one of the major issues that staff is looking for guidance from us, and the neighborhood association is entitled to know what we're thinking. So with that, Ms. Berger is next.
I'm hoping somebody else will go first. I hit my light because I was just thinking. I'm really struggling with the Jeffy Trail extension. I think that the neighbors made some really good points, and I guess the only thing that I would like to add is to think about, if because there is so much of this area that isn't built out, if there are any other ways to increase connectivity. I mean, the problem is, what's the name of that road? That Trevor Way. The problem is all those houses that are just looking are constructed on Trevor Way. I mean, it's too bad we can't get a connection more east-west there that goes over to whatever the next street is down that Hickory Ridge that does connect. But I don't know if there's anything to play with over there and getting a connection, you know, just to make it better. I see that there seems to be at least one gap, but maybe that doesn't make sense to connect a street along that gap that isn't constructed.
Yeah, we do kind of run out of opportunities on that southern end. As you mentioned, this is developed with single family here. This connection, there's right of way here, but it doesn't exist right now. Looking at the plans, we do show this east-west street connecting to the future High Point. This is something that we need to look at very seriously with engineering. As much as we would love that connection, that's one that I would be very concerned that it's physically impossible to build because the grades are so severe at that location. So we start peeling off, you know, it's kind of the death by a thousand cuts. So we look at our opportunities, especially south, and Jeffy is the only real significant opportunity. And I think Tim could probably speak to the grade issues on Trevor better than I can.
Well, I don't know that we need to do that.
Oh, and I didn't necessarily mean completing the cul-de-sac. I remember why that was. I was more thinking across, what's that southern? What's the road that runs east-west, is it Flagstone? You know, if only Flagstone could just keep going.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was thinking, like an east-west connection to get over to Hickory Drive, but that runs right into a house on Trevor Way. Unless that neighbor wants to sacrifice their house for the park. Maybe not. that's more what I was, yeah. I'm not revisiting the cul-de-sac on Trevor Way, I understand that. Anyways.
That's it. Okay, Mr. Next.
Yeah, a couple comments. I guess I support what Mr. Cantrell said and Mr. King has said in the past, but I want to reiterate it. I think at the five-point intersection down there, Raymond Road, I don't think a commercial use in that area because of lack of access. First off, I don't think any commercial unit would even go to the area if they have no access or limited access. So I think that could be taken off the books. However, I do support some other use, maybe limited use like a church or institutional use like Meritor Hospital, something of that nature would be appropriate. The Jeffrey Drive, and again, that's a kind of a tough thing, but I think the charge to the Planning Commission is not to look at necessarily what's out there today, but we got to look ahead 50, 60, 100 years that this road is going to be there, and what does it really serve? And I really think, as Mr. Cantrell said, we need to not necessarily rush into the extension of Jeffrey Drive, but we need to do the work that's at County Trunk Highway M and Raymond Road. We need to do that first, and we need to do the Raymond Road project first, and I think there's some support to even removing the portion of Raymond Road to the north of the Meritor facility up to Jeffrey Drive. Because you do that, and I think it's been stated that there could be up to 1,000 cars per day on that road. Well, I look at that with those roads out of there. I don't see much more than 5 or 10 cars going up there. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's pretty minor connection now because the major traffic has taken off. So I would support the extension of some extension of Jeffrey Drive, but I would leave it up to planning to make the bike path, walkway path in that area something that's out of this world and really nice for the neighborhood, because that is a nice area that's down there. And I think that's important to them to preserve that access to that area. But I think the roadway extension also needs to happen to them.
Thank you. Alder Carter?
Yes, I'm just going to quickly echo some of the comments that were made before. I would be very careful on the forecasting of commercial.
Sure.
I think there's enough examples where we thought commercial would boom and all we have is storefronts. Also, the Jeffrey Trail area should be, extension should be delayed until we get all the moving parts together. But I am a strong advocate of having a ped bike trail separate. And I think not only do the cyclists enjoy that, but also people who walk. Thank you.
Mr. Hagenow.
So I'm going to just jump right into Jeffrey Trail, I think. Seems like the popular thing to do. I believe that connectivity really needs to happen. I think we definitely need to plan it very well, though, and try and keep that walkable nature and the more wooded or park-like nature to that street as much as possible, and would strongly urge you to do all you can to make sure that that happens. Okay. Thank you.
That concludes all the lights except Alder McKinney. I would like to ask the commission's permission to bring Mr. Handowski back up, because I can see he's been a little concerned about what he's been hearing, and I think he may have some more input. So if it's okay with you, I'll reopen the public hearing and ask Mr. Handowski to come back up. Yeah, I need you to be back here for TV Land. Oh, it's not a public hearing, it's just a discussion, so even easier.
My question is, who is the access supposed to serve? Who is the access? What community is that access supposed to serve? The community that's there today uses something else, and they're fine with it. They're agreeing to the engineering failure, right? That's the traffic engineering way of putting this. They agree to the failure, right? So where's 1,000 cars of traffic going to come from a day? It's because you don't have a north-south connection, which is supposed to be High Point, right? When I was at the fire department sevens and we were going through the routes of that, the first thing the captain said is, "Oh, shoot, I see where the 1,000 cars are going to come from. You're lucky if it's only 1,000, because the people south of that are going to use that to go north, right? If High Point Raymond isn't, if High Point Extension isn't there, they're going to use that route and go north, right? And they're going to use that to cut back over to High Point and go to Watts, to Woodman's, and to other places, right? So I guess my concern is, whose community is really supposed to serve? What the Long Range Transportation Committee said in the second meeting was, gosh, there's a lot of things that don't make sense. You're dropping connections and adding connections. It looks like you need to go back and reprioritize, which was one of the things that we talked about. What is the order of prioritization that should take place here?
right? Are you doing this solely because High Point Raymond isn't there? That's what it looks like it is to us. 1,000 vehicles a day, when you talk about, like, well, you can do whatever you like to try to make it safer. Think about 1,000 roads of traffic. If you think about the gradient that goes up to Trevor Way today and the people that are served that, you know, that are served coming down through that and going across Sheffy today, you will further destroy that habitat because of what you need to do to make it safe. What are you going to do, build 6-foot walls to keep kids from biking right off into the street? The Long Range Transportation Committee basically said, you know what, we need to take a road trip and go look at this. I would encourage and invite you to do the same thing. Again, I'm having difficulty with the math, right? If the 400 and some odd, you know, people there today who use that regularly say they'd rather prefer to go someplace else, where's the thousand cars going to come from? And we haven't even touched on the safety issues as far as what that means from an engineering standpoint when you begin to multiply several fold the potential incidence of accidents, right? 1,000 vehicles a day, doesn't matter what kind of speed limit you put there, you're basically creating a connector where it should be a local street. There's not going to be a 20 miles an hour. It's not going to be 25 miles an hour. You can engineer that all you like, but people are going to go as fast as they like. And if you've made this a connector, they're going to take a connector speed. And you have families on both sides of Jeffrey Trail. You know, I've looked at it. The driveways don't match up. And from a road engineering perspective, I know that you introduce more conflicts with the various, when driveways aren't the 60 feet apart, and you now have driveways that are going in multi directions and having to cross Jeffy as well. So you introduce 1,000 cars of traffic with people trying to access both north and south from both sides of the road. It increases the potential for risk to the neighborhood. All right. One of the things that one of the residents said that really resonated with me is, first principle is do no harm. When I think about the connection and I think about that basic principle, there is harm. It's harm to the asset and the value of the neighborhood, and it introduces a lot more risk that is not even there today. So from a safety perspective, you can go find an actual error list or something that can run the risk numbers as far as you introduce 1,000 cars of traffic at speed or more. You introduce the types of driveways, you introduce the people, you introduce the children, you introduce the school buses, and you tell me what that probability is. I'm not a genius mathematician, but I bet you it's pretty damn high. So as we go forward, I would consider that you can look at this, because we will ask for all the math. We'll ask for the math from the fire department. We'll ask for the math, you know, from a risk perspective. And that's what the residents are there talking about as well. It was not just the preservation of what they find extremely valuable. It's the risk involved. And I think that needs to be a consideration. Again, my basic question is, who's that supposed to serve? There's not 1,000 houses there. So where are the 1,000 cars coming from? And I don't think it's there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come back. Is that? Sorry, I didn't see the lights.
I got forced to read a traffic engineering book because of this. So,
well, you got your money's worth. Alder King?
So, can you clarify the comment about the driveway conflicts? I mean, I'm looking at the map.
Oh, now you're going to make me go to the engineering book.
Well, other than Mr. Stanford's house and the intersection of the multifamily across the street from him, there are going to be no driveways off of the extension.
If you go to Jeffy Trail, and I think the engineering principle is driveways are supposed to be a standard like 60 feet apart, and they're supposed to line up. They don't. Right? So. Well, it doesn't matter where it is. There, they don't line up. So I don't know what that does, but I think it introduces additional conflict when people are going to be having to cross the lane, right, to head south, or crossing the lane to go north. Right? So there's an engineering principle there that involves how you look at traffic.
So you're not really talking about the extension. You're talking just about through traffic in general.
Yeah, and again, when you take that 1,000 cars and you take the houses that are on either side and they're needing to access the road, right, So, again, I don't know what that specific number is, but I know that the principle is there that needs to be evaluated.
And earlier in the testimony the other night, you did talk about the sort of epic population, and we should be sensitive to not overreacting to that phenomenon, more or less. So, yeah. And I think we all understand that Epic has sort of a specific turnover model in their population. They hire young people who haven't been polluted by other organizations' policies and procedures, and they burn them out, and then they send them on their way, and many of them leave the area. Some of it because of non-compete, but some of it just because that's the model. But they are all being replaced by similar people moving into the area, doing the same thing and turning back over. So they're not, I think you sort of, I think I walked away you characterizing it as sort of like they're moving away, but they're being replaced. And now we have 8,000 to 10,000 of them being replaced. And last time I checked, 4 cranes in the sky preparing for whatever they're adding on. So I'm not.
No, great points. One of the things that we agreed with is, as one of our primary concerns about the neighborhood development plan in general was the moving towards the really the higher densities because of the rental problem, right? The housing issue downtown. Our fundamental point with that is, you're right, you're building a road infrastructure that's going to be there for decades, if not 100 years. What happens if something happens to Epic? Right? What happens? We've now built an infrastructure that's going to be in place for, you know, 100 years that's going to serve who if something goes away? Again, I don't know what the probability is, low or high, but you put all your eggs in one basket, right? One thing that Dan agreed with us on is, hey, when those Epic people are there and they actually want to have a family and move, they shouldn't have to leave the city of Madison to find a house. So that made a lot of sense to introduce a better mix of single-family homes into the same area so they can stay and enjoy the assets that they enjoy today without leaving the city, which, as you well know, we already have a significant revenue problem, right? So we'd like to keep these people here, right? So that part made sense.
I want to keep Epic here. Some of them don't have to stay. Right?
And the Epic people enjoy that today, right? They use that bike trail all the time. And you haven't really addressed the north side of Jeffy Trail as well, where it's the unimproved 21-foot wide, you know, country road. And it comes over a hill, which is also an issue for safety.
All right, thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thanks.
Alder McKinney, thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to first thank the Commission for this very robust discussion. It was well appreciated, and thank you for really directing it to give comments and directions about Jeffy, because that's absolutely what this kind of boils down to, and we need to really get at it. I'm just going to take a few minutes to give the Commission a little bit of history, since I have the mic. When I became an alder in 2015, Jeffy Trail was absolutely the first thing that I encountered as I was knocking on doors. Jeffy Trail was the first thing that I encountered at my first public meeting. Jeffy Trail was what I encountered at the Board of Estimates when I made the amendment that we needed to extend the decision on Jeffy Trail. But to add to that is to establish a neighborhood, a citizen work group, to really work with staff and looking at that area very diligently, the way that you've been looking at it over these several months. That committee has done its work, and it's done its work well. And I add that because I need to kind of cover a couple of points. I understand that we are early in the process, and all of us understand that this is a highly sensitive area, and you've respected that, and I really do appreciate that. Since we are in the conceptual stage, I would ask that you really seriously take the time to flush out all the alternatives, all the options related to this small piece of land. Because place, a sense of place, does matter. And what you've heard the residents and what I've heard the residents say over and over again is that they value that property. Now, we can't go back and correct the early planning and why the bike path or why all of that, but we sit here today looking at a group of citizens who've come together to say, are there any other options? What are the concepts? And I implore you to look at that. I also implore you to answer the question, and this was cited in the email from Kathy, and to really look at the response time, the improved emergency response time. That has to be a part of your overall presentation, and I understand that planning staff is working with the fire department to flush that out as well. And so as the alder of that district, of this district, I have to say that for 450 plus citizens to take the time, I don't have the time to read a traffic engineering book the way Mr. Hendasi has said. But that's not I don't think that that's the alder's role. The alder's role is to encourage and engage citizens to participate in civic, I won't say discord, but get involved with the decisions that impact their lives. If that means reading a 450-page traffic engineering book, I applaud Mr. Hendasi for doing that, because that's what this is really all about. That's what this commission is really all about, that citizens come before you and say, is there a better way? And the citizens have come before you to ask you, is there a better way? So I encourage you to treat this with the highest degree of sensitivity, to look at all the alternatives, to look at the timing, the schedule, and the priorities, what goes first, what must go first, and in that order to make the decision about this, what's before you now. And so as the alder, I have to say that the work group has done its work, and I am extremely proud of the work that they have done. And in that, as the alder of this district, I have to say that I stand with the residents of this area, because they did exactly what I asked them to do, and they did it well. And they gave a lot of dedicated, committed time to what was before you. And so my ask is this, to look at this most sensitive area, and as some of the commissioners have already said, is to ask the planning to maintain as much of this sacred little land that residents are trying to preserve, whether it's a bike path, whether there are other entryways, to look at all aspects of the Jeffrey Trail, High Point, Raymond Road extension, so that when you make your recommendations and your and eventually this is a decision that will come before the Common Council, and that is where the decision would be made. But I ask you to make sure that you have covered all the bases before it comes through to the Common Council. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Alder McKinney. Mr. McAuliffe, do you have anything you want to add before we wrap up the discussion?
Sure.
Okay.
Just to speak to a couple of the traffic issues that were mentioned, the 1,000 cars per day is a preliminary estimate by the MPO based on the current conditions. We're currently working on an analysis that is looking at how the neighborhood traffic influences the volumes within the neighborhood. Basically going down and the idea that, you know, if you have a lot of ins and outs of a neighborhood, there's going to be less traffic through the neighborhood. As a result, less traffic through the neighborhood creates a safer neighborhood environment. I think everybody would generally agree to that. So we're trying to model how much internal traffic reduction the potential Jeffy Trail extension would have and how that would relate to any additional through traffic that it could create. Just speaking to the MPO, they haven't seen the strong linkage for a through traffic. That doesn't mean it won't exist. I'm sure if a road exists, a couple people will drive through it. That's why we have roads. But we're certainly working on the numbers to really clarify what the true traffic impact will be. And I don't think it's certain that it's a positive increase. I think there's a large or a strong chance that actually the Jeffy Trail extension could decrease traffic in the neighborhood, specifically by providing an additional outlet for existing neighborhood residents to go traveling a shorter distances in the neighborhood.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion before we end? Well, seeing none, I just want to add a few comments. You know, we are the plan commission, and we spend a lot of time dealing with rather narrow issues, a conditional use here, a rezoning there. Tonight, this discussion, I think, shows the fundamental importance of why we are here. And I want to thank the staff, Alder McKinney, the neighbors, and you as well. I think that we have done our job and done it well. And I think we've given some significant guidance as this moves forward and, keep everybody involved in the process. So thank you very much. I believe that brings us to business by members and the secretary's report.
No business by members. Okay. All right. Looking ahead to March 20th, a few things shown on your agenda will actually be referred to April 3rd due to Urban Design Commission schedules. So the 205 to 213 North Gammon Road. Oh, I'm sorry. Not that one. The conditional use for the Butler Street and Hancock apartment building will be referred to April 3rd. Major items on the March 20th agenda are a major addition to the Hotel Red at 1501 Monroe Street, and also two multifamily building projects within the new Autumn Lake subdivision. Looking ahead to April 3rd, we'll also have a hotel on Frey Street. This is in the Hilldale area. That will be a major item before you. And also the conditional use request at 1603 to 1609 Monroe Street. This was a project that was recently approved. The Plan Commission and Council then approved an opportunity for an applicant to seek a conditional use for a drive-through facility in the TSS zoning district. So that request will be coming back to you on April 3rd. And I think those are the most significant items. Look forward to seeing you all on March 20th, if not before.
Motion to adjourn would be in order. Moved by Alder King, seconded by Mr. Cantrell. All those in favor say aye. We are adjourned, 8:09. Thank you.